passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me is Dylan White, who has not hit the injured list with an elbow issue, a shoulder issue, or any other sort of ailment, as far as I know. He's out here. The Robo Scout is teasing at this point. We don't have Dylan hasn't turned it up to 11 just quite yet, but it's coming. Dylan, welcome to the show, man. How are you? How was your week?
The week was all right. Not bad. I can't believe that we're almost at the end of April. Over 10% of the baseball season has come and gone. The Jays are getting hot. I think every team in the AL East is above 500. I think that was something I saw today. So yeah, no, I'm doing all right. My elbow's fine. My shoulder's fine.
Good.
So like I can probably throw 60 miles an hour, topping out at 62, and away we go.
Nice. Well, that's valuable information to have for sure. Unfortunately, though, Dylan, more of our fantasy teams took hits this week with more injuries. The big ones, I think, are Francisco Alvarez and Tristan Casas. I had shares of both in multiple places. I had at least one team that had both. It's a bit of a blow with that much power comes out of your lineup. And I haven't dug as much on the Alvarez injury. You could probably fill me in a little bit more there. But the Casas one sounds like it's going to be a couple of months if I'm going to guess, you know. Bad swing, immediately started, you know, reaching for like, you know, his abdomen, back core area. And those can last a long time, especially if there is like, you know, potential tearing, etc. So I think we're not going to see Casas for a bit, maybe not until it's much warmer than it is right now. So that's a tough blow. I don't know if you had him anywhere, if you have any other sort of insight or anything to add on that injury. Then we can talk Alvarez.
I guess reading the tea leaves, or between the lines, between the tea leaves, sounded like Cora and Casas are quote unquote concerned, and
yes,
he's going to be out for a while. So that usually means months. I think it's like, it's not just like an oblique or something. It's like a rib something. So I don't know. Just sounds more ominous. So yeah, I have him in one DC. That DC is doing terribly. So it's not really that much of a concern. I have him to win the home run crown. I have a bet, so I'm not going to win that bet. But yeah, the Francisco Alvarez one, he says 6 to 8 weeks, and he's aiming towards the early part of that. So it may not be that bad. But, you know, it's a thumb, so it may impact his power when he comes back. So even if he's back 6 weeks, like he probably won't be full strength for like 9 weeks, like in terms of hitting production, something like that. But yeah, I don't have Alvarez anywhere. Do love him though. It's a tough one.
Less of a bar to clear when you come back from an injury. As a catcher though, I will give him that. So maybe, you know, his distance between with him and sort of the other top players at that position versus the field, and even players that are owned in 10 or 12 team mixed leagues with a single catcher, don't necessarily provide the same sort of upside or production that Alvarez can when he's healthy. So yeah, that was definitely an unfortunate one, and one that, like I said, hurt a couple of my own teams. Before we get into more injury news, I wanted to throw this one out there for you. Everyone's kind of obviously talked about it. It's certainly something that we hate when this happens with prospects, when they struggle so mightily that, you know, it's almost impossible at this point to sort of justify your ranking, etc. You know, even though I don't think the first few weeks of Jackson Holliday's career, of course, that's who we're talking about here, defines him by any stretch of the imagination. But it has been a little bit concerning. And, you know, I thought there were things I saw the first game that I was there, and then just that first series in Boston, where it just seemed like he was trying to sort of pull everything and like was just trying to catch one and get his first homer sort of out of the way. I haven't watched as much over the last week plus. There's been a lot of other games, a lot of other things going on that have caught my attention. Haven't been plugged in or dug in on Holliday. I did bench him in a few leagues just to sort of ride it out and sort of hope I get some son of a bench, as Rasbaugh would call it, magic, where, you know, you bench him and all of a sudden he snaps out of it and you get a hot week and you're like, all right, I can't take this guy out of the lineup now.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't – you can't play him right now. He's so cold. I mean, there aren't even really any, like, green shoots of optimism, like 50% strikeout rate, ground ball rate above 50%, contact rate is bad, as you'd expect, swinging strike rate's bad. Looks like he's trying to pull everything. So I think you got to bench him in a redraft league. In terms of dynasty value, I think obviously this doesn't change anything.
Oh, no.
Still very young, blah, 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 number one prospect. But yeah, it's a bit, not concerning, but it's a bit deflating, I guess. We're so used to seeing young hitters come up and just mash. And we're seeing, like, Langford too isn't exactly tearing it up.
Yeah.
But then there's Ellie De La Cruz, who, I mean, he's not a rookie, but who is tearing it up. So, you know, we're seeing these huge wide margins of incredible performance and then like incredibly disappointing performance.
I think when you look underneath the hood with Holliday, he doesn't look like he belongs, right? Like, just in terms of the 50% strikeout rate, it's a 6% walk rate. It's just not the Jackson Holliday that we saw. Like, I anticipated a high walk rate. It's only been 9 games, so this can stabilize over a much larger sample size of 20 or 30 games. But I would have anticipated a guy who was going to strike up maybe 21%, 22% of the time would have been a higher strikeout rate for Jackson Holliday over a decent sample size. We saw that the strikeout rate was up in AAA. I know that he still ranks very highly, if not highest, on RoboScout. I read it this morning and then just totally spaced, so you can correct me there if I'm wrong. But does have that the high strikeout rate, even in AAA for the first time. There was a little bit more swing and miss. We know that there was a focus on adding some power. Maybe he traded some of that hit. That is the one thing that I can say, like, objectively taking a step back here. Is there a chance that the things that made him special, that he didn't sell it for power, that there was this all fields approach and really great bat to ball skills and contact, and then the power were sort of coming, but it was like a line drive sort of power approach. Maybe that was like sort of best where he fit at this point, especially physically. Because I will say, like, and I hope that I'm saying this and we come back in a week and he hits 4 home runs or something this week, but physically he doesn't look like a big leaguer. I know his face looks young and all that sort of thing, but he's thin for a big leaguer. Like, he's not built like a man. He's not strong. And even the smaller guys on the field are broader and stronger. Like, you know, he was the noticeably the smallest, least physically mature person on the field. So I sort of wonder if selling out for that sort of power, because he doesn't have that physicality at this point, maybe was a bad idea. And it's a matter of sort of rolling it back and going to a more simple approach where he is looking to make all fields contact, get on base, run, do the things that he does well. You know, so guys get a little domed up. So, yeah, I do have some concerns there. Where I look at Wyatt Langford, if I can jump in here for a second and say 20% strikeout rate, it's a 9% walk rate for all intents and purposes. You know, I'm a little bit less concerned there. Like, is the ground ball rate kind of high? Sure, it's 41%, but he's hitting the ball in the air a lot. I think some of that stuff is going to stabilize. I think we've seen video evidence a few weeks ago of some of the awful calls that he's gotten. He kind of is getting the rookie sort of zone at this point. I think that is something that does exist. So, you know, with Langford, I think it's just a matter of like waiting it out. And I think he will turn it around. Contact numbers are still pretty good. Zone contact numbers are fine. He's got a 6.9% swing and strike rate. He's not chasing very often. I think when I look at Langford, I say, okay, like, I think we're going to see a little bit better, you know, now that he's adjusting a little bit, figuring things out, seeing timing, seeing major league pitching, playing day after day in a way that he's never played before. I think that's a big adjustment from the college game. These guys that do jump directly into the majors, like, the grind of the college game is very different from the grind of the professional game. Even in the minor leagues, you know, when you're playing 6 days a week and you get one off day and you're traveling around all over the place in a small geographic area, major leagues are even way different. I mean, we saw with Yoshida last year, his second half was rough. And I know one of the things that he had mentioned that, you know, was sort of the culprit was dealing with that, the travel and sort of the grueling schedule of the major leagues. So I think it's something that Langford will adjust to, but maybe it's something that when we were looking at this guy as like a no doubt rookie of the year candidate versus Evan Carter, that, hey, this guy hasn't been through that grind before. And maybe it's a point, this is going way into a big, longer esoteric sort of conversation, but maybe that's a point in favor of the guys who come out at 18 and get drafted out of high school, that they have that opportunity, that runway to get those 2, 3, 4 years even of professional experience and get used to the routine and the grind, because I think that is something that's a little bit underrated.
Yeah, I think all that is fair. I think all that is fair for sure. I'm definitely not concerned about Langford. I think it's just more like we're so spoiled that we want to see the 30 home runs, 20 stolen bases, all that kind of thing in a vaunted Texas Rangers offense. And it's just not happening right now. So, and it's just patience for Langford. I'd keep him in my lineup as well. I wouldn't take him out. Holiday, I'd take out, but Langford, I wouldn't.
Let's go with some more bad news, and then we'll end up with some good news. Bad news for both of us. The boys are very sad about this one. Ricky Tiedemann is meeting with team doctors. Now, you said it was a shoulder.
I thought I saw shoulder. I thought first it was elbow, and then I thought I saw an update, and it was shoulder. So, but I could be mistaken.
I don't know specifics on the injury. I had seen elbow discomfort, and then you said shoulder. So if you can find me where it says shoulder, I can ask about that and get to the bottom of it. But either way, it's bad. This sounds awful. If it's a bad injury, I hope it's the elbow, because the shoulder is, that's a different story, Dylan. And I think, you know, that's one of those where like, there's no roadmap back, you know, you're dealing with a whole other bit of uncertainty with major shoulder injuries. Now, we know that there was some elbow stuff, some bicep stuff a year ago. I think some of that was tied to some nerves, etc. It wouldn't be shocking if it is an elbow injury and we do end up seeing Tiedemann ended up having to have, whether it's brace or Tommy John, or if they could even go the PRP route, which I think they might have explored last year or done a little bit last year. I can't recall. But, you know, that's concerning. I'm a little worried because I am generally a fan of Ricky. I've seen him so many times. He's, you know, a big prospect that pitched up here. So obviously when I can get up there and I can see him, I would. He's really exciting. Just, you know, a big physical left-hander with a low arm slot that has big stuff and sort of unique shapes. I saw him obviously this year. I saw him in spring training. I saw him in his rehab last year. I saw him in you know, 2022 when he broke out as well. Still very young, but this isn't good news. So I don't know. I think he kind of got a hold on this one with Tito.
Yeah. So to clarify, so Roto World said shoulder, and then in their write-up they say shoulder, and their source they cite is Ben Nicholson Smith of Sportsnet, and he says elbow. So I think it is an elbow, because Arden Zwelling also in Sportsnet says the same thing. Keegan Matheson, beat writer, okay, says elbow as well. So sounds like it's an elbow for Tiedemann. Yeah, obviously it's a huge blow. I have him in a bunch of places. I'm also a Jays fan, as you may suspect. And I just don't like, he's never really thrown along. Like, there's been no like innings build up, and there's always some injury that seems to be weighing on him every year. And they baby him too, it seems, and he's still coming down with injuries. So definitely doesn't bode well.
Can I put on my tinfoil hat for a second?
Uh-oh. Yes, of course.
Right. So if you look back in 2022, one of the really unique things about Ricky Tiedemann's first half of a season in pro ball is he got into the fifth, sixth inning. He threw 70, 80 pitches on a fairly consistent basis. He was efficient, and, you know, his stuff was just crisp. And there was a period around the All-Star break where they shut him down before they sent him to Double-A. And then after they sent him to Double-A, they sort of like limited his innings. And then I think they actually shut him down and skipped him a few times. So I kind of wonder if there had been an elbow injury at some point around that time, conveniently around the All-Star break. So it was easy to explain away. And he's been pitching with something, or trying to pitch through something, for the better part of a year. Because we've seen bits and spurts of him coming off long rest. Spring training 2023, when he came back and I saw him in low A, and he was 97-98, the best I've ever seen him in terms of command. I forget, he had 17 swinging strikes in four innings or something. It was goofy. And then they kind of babied him. He was shut down for a month or whatever, goes to the Arizona Fall League, pitches pretty well in the Arizona Fall League, was shut down again after four starts. And then comes out in spring, looked pretty good in spring. And then once he's pitching for a while, the command starts to go, the stuff starts to go, and then he has another injury. So I don't actually know anything here, but I do kind of wonder, like, thinking out loud, if Tiedemann has had some sort of a longer lingering injury that is maybe finally coming to fruition here. Or it could have been a variety of things, and this is just totally tinfoil hat Jeff over here worrying about his buddy. Not my buddy, but someone who I'm quite a fan of. You know, I don't collect many baseball cards, but I actually went and I bought like a bunch of Ricky cards because they're fairly cheap, because pitchers are cheap. He was kind of depressed in terms of value this year, so I went and I bought a bunch of them. Not anything crazy expensive, but just like, you know, of his first Bowmans and that sort of thing. So I do have like a Ricky Tiedemann baseball card collection. So I'm pulling for Ricky. Obviously, you're a Jays fan. My youngest son's a Jays fan. I love covering the Jays, and it's one of my teams that I pay the most attention to throughout the year. Though, you know, I am unbiased and I have no fandom feeling, but still, don't want to see that happen. Finishing up here on bad news, Peter Fairbanks goes down. He gave a really candid interview after a meltdown last week. I wonder what it really is, but we'll see where this sort of goes. I think anywhere that I drafted Fairbanks, and I know that I had him quite a few places, just like you did, I backed it up with Jason Adam almost everywhere but one team. I don't know if he's going to get the saves or not, but I do feel comfortable at least that I can plug him in this week. Like, oh, well, we'll see how this shakes out. And maybe he still doesn't, you know, still works in the same role that he's in. But all right, like, we'll see if there's a couple of saves that he ends up with. He was already potentially vulturing some, more so than other secondary guys to begin with. So it will be interesting. I don't know. What do you sort of make of the Fairbanks meltdown and then the IL stint following?
Well, first of all, I do think Jason Adams the guy to have. It's weird. So I do have Fairbanks. I've been watching him. So he had that outing in Colorado where it was just a crazy game back and forth. Justin Lawrence blew the save, I believe. And then like Fairbanks came out and walked the first three or four guys and his velo was like 3 miles an hour down. Mm-hmm. And he said it was just like he couldn't grab the ball. He was blaming the ball. It was too cold, something or else, something like that. And then he came back the next time and he wasn't that effective, but his velo was back up, but still not up to whatever. And then he had that meltdown where he said everything stunk. Everything suck. All-encompassing suck. But I'm sure you do remember, like, last year he had, like, that tingling in his fingers and it was, like, in cold weather he has this thing, like, Raynaud's syndrome or something where it's always going to – he can't feel the ball or whatever. And it sounds like he didn't pitch a couple days ago and they said illness. And then now he's on the IL with nerve issue. And I wonder if it's, like, the same thing. Some sort of cold weather thing. So I don't know if that means it's a chronic thing that's going to happen for the rest of his career in April, avoid Peter Fairbanks or trade for him from people who have him and they get upset in April. He did bounce back last year after he came back and he was pretty much lights out. So I don't know. Like right now I'm just a bit concerned, but I'm not like, drop Fairbanks everywhere. I think it's just, you know, wait it out. You kind of expect a Fairbanks injury. You kind of expect an Andrés Muñoz injury, that type of thing. And they still have good ratios. And then next year you buy back in and fall for it all over again.
That's kind of how it is. Like you sort of want to get Peter Fairbanks when he's coming back and like his manager's already ready to trade him or has dropped him. That's kind of where you want to get Peter Fairbanks. But like I said, I backed him up with Adam in a few places where I could. One league where I didn't. This is something that makes me crazy, Dylan, as a fantasy manager, at least. I hate Monday morning, afternoon IL stints. Like when Fairbanks hit the IL, it was like a mad scramble to get lineups in where he wasn't like immediately locked for like a weekly lock, you know, when the first game goes live. And we had a 1 o'clock game today with the Yankees. So it was a mad scramble. And then on top of it, if you're in weekly fab leagues and fab runs on Sunday night, you have no way to really replace him. So like you're just throwing in some guy on your bench that maybe you're kind of iffy about, or, you know, like, hey, I'm holding on to this guy for the chance that so-and-so closer that I have, you know, goes down and maybe this guy comes in. Or he just has good ratios, you know, or gets a lot of strikeouts. It was like all of a sudden I'm thrust into starting that guy on my bench, which is not a great feeling because it just feels very unprepared and unplanned. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. And then another layer is the guy who dropped Jason Adam in Fab yesterday to pick up someone else and then sees that Fairbanks is injured and is cursing himself. For having dropped Adam. No. It's someone in my league, though, because I immediately put in a bid. So I don't forget.
No one's like, I'm not stupid. Come on.
I do have Fairbanks in a dynasty, and I can't remember who I put in for him. It wasn't horrible. Like I always kind of tout in dynasty leagues, you need depth. And so I always try to make sure I have somebody that I can just replace for these like last minute things that drive you nuts. Because I don't want to have the feeling you're having. So I make sure I have at least someone that I can throw in at all times. So like when Bryce Harper goes on the paternity list, I can, you know, put Nolan Chenuel in or something.
I feel like it's more like in like redraft leagues where it's like a guy that like I'm kind of fringy on holding on to. Like I think everyone has that guy on their bench where like maybe you have like a fluid spot. And then if you had two players you were going after, this guy is like the guy that kind of comes up. But you don't – like he's fringy. Like you're not dropping him for anybody. But if there's a hot commodity, you're willing to do it. And I feel like I always try to like plan out my starts. I'm like, all right, like I can add a two-start pitcher here. Who's got a couple of good matchups? Is it worth adding this guy? You know, or even like a closer or reliever where, you know, he's not in Colorado or something one week and like, fine, like maybe vulture some wins and saves like a high value guy like that. It's just not being able to plan for it always kind of makes me a little crazy in the weekly leagues, because a lot of like the work in those leagues really comes down to like Saturday and Sunday and sort of that 7 to 8, 9, 7 to 10, 7 to 12 window whenever your fab goes live, making sure that you're most up to date on news and injuries and chasing guys that are actually going to get at bats for you next week. Cause it's just a way different sort of strategy and planning. But up with the rest of the bad news here, Victor Scott was sent down. I don't think that's a shock in a lot of ways coming into the season. Like I thought Scott was a lot of fun. I thought he was going to go to Double A, tear it up for 2 months, Triple A, maybe finish the season and see some time in the majors in September. You know, he kind of showed he's not ready for prime time. So he couldn't even see the speed because he just could not get on base nearly enough. Defense is good, but I think he's still got some things to work on. So don't write off Victor Scott, but he's going to kind of be a decent buy as like a post-hype sleeper now. If you got minor league spots in a dynasty league, people might be willing to sell for a little bit less than they were willing to sell for a month ago. So I don't know. I think that's kind of interesting, but I don't think anything we got to dive into analysis on, unless you had anything you wanted to add on Victor Scott.
No, all that's true. I just hope, I wonder if Jackson Holliday is going to have the same treatment, get sent down.
You know, I think it might be a little bit different. I think they might ride this one out. Like we saw with Bregman or like Dustin Pedroia years ago, where he struggles for a month and then kind of figures it out. I think it's not out of the realm of possibility. I think that there was more intent with this, where Scott was sort of an emergency switch. Like they smashed the glass in case of emergency and they pulled the switch. You know, that's sort of kind of what they had to do, because they had what, three different center fielders in terms of depth go down over the course of a few weeks to a month. Some setbacks, I think, with Tommy Edmonds rehab and you know, Dylan Carlson goes down, etc. So it kind of put him into a precarious position. All right, let's end on some good news here, though. Heston Kjerstad is coming back in the majors. Where is he going to play, though, Dylan?
Good question. I mean,
Mountcastle, I think, is injured, right?
Well, he was scratched today. Yeah. I mean, Austin Hayes went on the IL, mm-hmm. Which, I mean, he lost his spot anyway to Kowser, I think, pretty much. So I think they'll rotate Kjerstad in, DHing. He'll probably get some outfield time, maybe have Santander DH a couple times. Good problem to have, I guess, is the bottom line for the Orioles. You have your number one prospect struggling, but it doesn't matter because you have a pipeline of Norfolk Tides that you can just bring up and circulate into your major league lineup and still be above 500 without any problems. I think 30 home run power, 250 plus batting average. So he's not going to really hurt you there. It's just a matter of getting the at-bats. He's probably a platoon, I guess, but he strongs out of platoon. So it's just, he'll have a 30 home run pace on a per plate appearance basis. And obviously in redraft, you'd want to pick him up, I think.
Yeah. And unfortunately in the dynasty leagues where I have him rostered and needed a utility spot this week and had to start a jabroni, this was another one where the call-up happened on Monday night and I was unable to react and do anything about that. And then Andy Pages is up and hitting, which I think we talked about last week, though. We did talk about Pages getting the call, if I am not mistaken. But maybe I'm mistaken. I don't know. But he hit, and I put in a huge bid for him in my annual-only labor because I had Mike Cianni because I've had so many IL injuries to my outfield already. That I was then able to dump Cianni for Pages, and it only cost me like $47. I don't even know what the second bid was. It could have been 23, It was one of those bids with Dylan where I was like, you know what? There's not going to be a lot of guys that come up. They're going to probably start for the Dodgers. He's in a pretty good spot. There's a chance he probably plays over Jason Hayward because he hits so well. And Hayward's had, I think, some setbacks in his rehab. And he's been playing every day. So I was like, you know, I'm going to take the gamble here. There's not that many guys that come up in NL that aren't already stashed. Like, you know, I have James Wood stashed. I have Christian Scott stashed. Other guys have other players of that ilk stashed. So there's not that many that come up. So, like, the waiver wire is kind of barren. So I went in. I made the move, you know. And somehow my pitching has stayed afloat despite the Spencer Strider injury. So go figure.
Yeah, I like Pajes as well. He hit a home run, too, yesterday as well. So his first, I believe. And then, yeah, we picked him up, too, Rob, DiPietro and I. I think it was $80, $85. $1,000 fab, $85. Runner-up was like 64 or something like that. So we wanted him. Our hitting is not good. So we needed, you know, a thumping bat that, you know, could be productive for the full year. So.
Yeah, and the thing is, good batting average. He doesn't strike out that much. Walks. The lineup around him, just by like osmosis, is like I try to target Dodgers and Braves in this league. That was kind of one of my mini strategies. Was like the cheaper guys in those lineups that play every day, like the Orlando Arcias and you know whatever the catcher is at the moment. I actually bought both of them. I had D'Arno and Sean Murphy, so I was prepared when Murphy went down. Those guys get counting stats just by like osmosis, just being in that, you know, lineup. I mean, we saw it with Eddie Rosario last year, who can like barely play every day for the Nationals, for Christ's sake. So I think it kind of puts things into perspective. One of the reasons that I wasn't totally off like Kelnick was kind of like, all right, like in an NL only, it sort of does make some sense. let's take a quick break because we probably should take one like 25 minutes ago. Dylan, when we come back, we're going to talk about some players that we view as buys. Three players that we want to buy after the first month of the season. What do you say, Dylan? Quick break. We'll come back and talk that.
Let's do it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them, all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage,
all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
And we're back. All right, Dylan. Putting you on the hot seat here. We're talking first month of the season. So it's a short, small sample size, short window, small sample size. Not a ton you can take away in the big picture, but are there some players that you want to go out there and trade for that you feel I should trade for them now? Because in a few weeks to a month to July, this might be a player that is going for significantly higher price tag than they are right now. Give me a player. Who's your first buy?
Yeah, so I like this question. I thought about it. See, like, what would be a good angle to take. So the first one I have is actually Esturi Ruiz. And you may think, you know, he's super hot right now, so you're not going to get him. But I think you kind of sell that angle to the person who has Esturi Ruiz. So he kind of, I traded for him in a dynasty league. I, in fact, traded Brian Reynolds for Esturi Ruiz. Because I needed saves. I needed saves. I needed stolen bases. Even I don't mind these guys who are like one-dimensional that are only going to be stolen bases, or like Luis Arias. I don't mind that at all. I think there's also more in the tank. I think he just had a bad season, and you know, he projects well. He's young enough to have a nice aging curve, and you know, 55 stolen bases type of thing, it'd be good. I thought he was safer than like a Victor Scott. Then he got sent down and it was bad. And then he's up, he's hit a home run, he's stolen bases, all his Statcast sliders are red. And I think you go to the prospective or the owner of Esturi Ruiz and you say, like, you pretend that you buy all this as a complete change. The guy is gonna think, oh no, I'm gonna sell high, so I will get rid of him. And so you kind of convince the owner that it's like you think this guy is the greatest, and so you want Esturi Ruiz. You don't offer too much, but you want to get him, and you make the guy willing and able to trade Esturi Ruiz. So I guess my point is, I think he's better than the projections were. A lot of people are down on Esturi Ruiz in general, notwithstanding the last couple weeks. And I think any chance they can get to kind of unload him, because they see how precarious it is. He got sent down, blah, blah, blah. He's still not playing every day. I think you can take advantage of that. And I think he will be productive and valuable. And I think you can get him for cheaper than he should be worth.
Yeah, no, I think that's realistic. And I think it's a great target. In a similar vein, somebody, and it's funny because this is a player that I actually was lower on in the offseason. I think I actually had him as a fade. That's Randy Arozarena. I thought the price was really high. I thought that there was a chance that things could back up a little bit. I think he's just been really unlucky on balls in play so far. 200 batting average on balls in play. I think you're still going to have to probably pay, you know, a decent price tag for what this guy is. But it's probably going to be really depressed from what it was a month or so ago. And I still think there's a few years left here of power and speed, could be interesting, you know, just been a slow, you know, 22 games. So I think you could trade for this guy right now, get a pretty good deal on him, and then you sort of buy him right at that perfect window. I did this last year in a couple of leagues with Michael Harris. If you remember, like over the first like month and a half, 2 months, the sky was falling. And it's not that I didn't trade the pretty good assets for him. It's just the assets I traded would not have gotten me Michael Harris at the beginning of the season, or the Michael Harris I got in the second half of the season. And I kind of feel like that's where I'm at with a lot of these guys that I look as targets. And I think Arozarena is a perfect one because he's just been really bad. I mean, it's a 45 WRC plus. He's in the bottom 12 hitters in baseball that are, you know, qualify for the batting title at the moment.
I like that call. I like the fact the Rays are still batting him like second or third in the order. Like, they are not dropping him into the seventh spot because, you know, he's got to shake out of the slump. They believe that it's just a variance and just a small sample size. So I really like that, especially because I have him. So my next one, it's kind of a good segue, is because of Rosarena would be a buy low, is something I like to do. This is the perfect window where it's like, it's April still, so it's still early, but it feels like the season's gone on for a while. So someone who has this player is probably panicking. And so this is like the perfect spot where you can kind of possibly, you know, pluck someone cheap. So, you know, you kind of look, the obvious one to do is you look at ERA of a pitcher and compare it to like the underlying metrics, like XFIP or FIP or Sierra. And so there's guys like Luis Castillo, who has a 4.40 ERA, but a 2.80 Sierra. George Kirby, also on the Mariners, obviously, 5.33 ERA, 3.33 Sierra. You kind of find these guys, you look and you see their BABIP is over 350. Their left on base is under 70%. So like, they have some bad luck, it seems. I don't know if you're going to be able to get Luis Castillo or George Kirby. So one that kind of fits in this one perfectly, and again, the window is very small, is Garrett Crochet, your guy. He obviously started off very, very strongly, and it looked like he has it going on, and then he gave up 7 earned runs in his last start, and his ERA just on that one start is now on the season 5.61. So I think, again, like the Asturi Ruiz rambling that I was doing, you find the owner of Garrett Crochet, and he's worried that, uh-oh, this whole thing was a mirage. But if you actually look at it, his Sierra is still 2.62. He still has a 33% K rate. His left on base is 55%, which is very, very low. That's something like James MacArthur of the Kansas City Royals, who had very, very good like stuff plus metrics and strikeout rates and all that, swing strikes, all that. But his left on base was so low, so his ERA was terrible. And a lot of people dropped him, and now he's the presumptive closer of Kansas City right now. Anyway, that was a sidebar. So Garrett Crochet is everything underneath. If you just looked at Garrett Crochet right now, you would buy him, I think. But the owner is scared because he had that bad start, and it's like, oh no, is this the end? And was it all a mirage? So I think you have a very, very short window, like a week, to try to get Garrett Crochet. And I would go with full confidence to try to get Garrett Crochet under the assumption he's the same guy he was just last week. That's what you could offer for Garrett Crochet.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. And I'm going to change gears a little bit here and go for somebody. I actually made a trade yesterday. I traded two players I like a lot that I've hyped up quite a bit, Bryce Eldridge and Henry Lalanne, for Orelvis Martinez. And I'm going to tell you, I need middle infield help. I need second base help. Second base is a position that is in high demand in my 30-team league because there's just not a lot of second basemen. I have a couple right now. I actually traded for Oliver Dunn a couple weeks ago. I traded Michael Lorenzo for Oliver Dunn just because I needed somebody that I could plug into my second base spot, which would allow me to move Christopher Morel around. So I was able to do that. I went and I traded for Orelvis because, you know, second base isn't really setting the world on fire right now in the Blue Jays lineup. I don't know if you agree or disagree with me on that one. And Orelvis and Barger are two of the hottest hitters right now in AAA, in the minor leagues. They're showing really good traits, hitting the ball hard and just really grinding out at bats. I know that the organization is, you know, fairly happy with that. I can't guarantee that it's going to happen like in the next week, the next month, maybe not even the next 2 months. But I do think there's a chance somebody goes down, Kevin Biggio goes down, continues to struggle. I do think there's some opportunity here for Elvis to come up, and we could see this guy and maybe Barger both in the Blue Jays infield at some point, maybe July. We'll see. Because I think that those are two players that look, they're major league ready, and it's two positions of need for this team. down the bottom of the lineup, and I think they can carry enough defensively, particularly Barger, that'll be all right. Now, I do understand that, like, Kiner Falefa is a very good defensive player. So there's some questions there, but I don't know. I kind of feel like right now is a good time to kind of go out and get Orelvis, because if he continues to mash, and, you know, the numbers, the systems are going to love him, and this is a guy that does have a clear path for opportunity already on the 40-man roster as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely for sure. I think the window is closing too, because he's has like 5 home runs in the last 7 games or something ridiculous. So you probably struck at the right time yesterday to get him. I think if they're keeping him at third or short, then it's like they don't really have any like specific near-term plans for him, because like short and third right now is kind of taken up. But the fact he's playing second, it kind of feels like they're grooming him to, like, that's where he's going to play, obviously, when he comes up in the major. So I think he definitely will be up this year. I do like Davis Schneider, but they're playing him in the outfield a lot. And Kevin Biggio.
Barger has seen time in right field as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think Orelvis probably has a better path. But yeah, like you said, Barger is killing it as well. I pulled up RoboScout here, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Orelvis is like 10th on the list and Barger's 12th. So they're kind of right beside each other. And like in that list is Jonathan Classe, who's in the majors, and Andy Pajes, who's in the majors, and Heston Kjerstad, who's in the majors, and Jackson Holliday, who's in the majors. So it's not like, why is he all the way down at 10? It's like, these are major leaguers, basically. Yeah, no, I like that a lot. I do like that a lot. I've always liked Orelvis. The power is there. He's an OBP guy, not a batting average guy. But like, it looks like he's kind of, his contact rate, you know, 67%. It's kind of basically average. And he's so young that it's like, I can see him have a 260 batting average at peak for sure.
I think the thing with Orelvis too is you have to look at the bigger picture. Look at his strikeout rates. Even in the year that he hit 203 as a 20-year-old, where he shouldn't have been in Double A for a full season, he had under a 30% strikeout rate. You know, we're talking about draft prospects that are getting a couple million dollars. They're going to be potential top 100 prospects that have strikeout rates that are like close to what Orelvis's were in, you know, whatever, the ACC. So, I mean, Vance Honeycutt has a 30% strikeout rate, I think, right? So it's just, I think sometimes we can flatly look at contact rates, we can flatly look at strikeout rates and not necessarily understand the at-bats. Orelvis attacks strikes. Like when he gets strikes, he attacks strikes. And at times that will lead to, because he uses his A swing all the time, almost like Jorge Soler. So like that's going to lead to some swing and miss. But he hits enough, and there is enough bat to ball ability and like legitimate power and barrel control that he never swings and misses, or that many at bats don't end up with strikeouts as the outcome. We've seen the approach get better. You know, we've seen the approach for 2 years get a lot better, just in terms of the type of stuff he's swinging at, when he's attacking, when he isn't. Will he get beat by 95 up in the zone that he's, you know, he tries to elevate? Sure, that will happen from time to time. But if you throw him that pitch 3 times, he's probably going to hit it at least once. And I think that's the thing I've come to learn with Orelvis and why I've been a fan over the last year or two. Because there was legitimate growth and maturity that he showed at the plate in 2023. And I think it's carried over to 24. And he's mashing. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. Even beyond the power numbers, he was hitting pretty well to begin with. You know, 21% strikeout rate in AAA, 7.6% walk rate, 333, 392, 681 with those 6 pumps, 20 runs, 18 RBIs in 22 games. It's a really exciting Buffalo team as well. Now, for your last target, Dylan, who are you going with?
Yeah, I wanted to do a minor leaguer. And I was thinking Cam Collier, who I wrote about in the RoboScout article, but 19-year-old with 6 home runs, I think. He is getting a lot of buzz and it'll be hard to get that guy, but he's someone I would definitely buy. So I wanted to do kind of play the same trend I'm doing of like playing the owner and kind of buying low, getting good value, I guess. And so I'm going to be outside the box here. I'm going to say Colorado Rocky pitchers, Chase Dolander, Dolander, and Carson Palmquist.
Ooh.
They are obviously going to play in Coors, and so the owner of those players are not enthused about that. But Dolander is number two in high A on RoboScout, just behind Noah Schultz. Carson Palmquist is actually number one in double A. This is when you fold in the stuff plus as well. So don't pay a lot for Carson Palmquist or Chase Dolander. Kind of play the idea that it's a Colorado Rockies pitcher. So you like, why would you want this person on your team? And I think get them and then hope they get traded or well, they may. My point is there's an opportunity here because the stuff and the underlying results are actually quite good. The only downside, only in quotes, downside is that they play in Colorado when they make it to the majors. But I think if you can play the lottery there and they get moved and you don't pay too much, like you're not going to pay what you would for a Tink Hens or a Bubba Chandler or something like that, a Caden Dana, you're paying for a Colorado price, which I think will be quite cheap. And so if they get moved in some sort of deal, then maybe you get a good bargain out of it. Maybe this one wasn't a good one, but I like the idea of like, you don't pay a lot, but there could be a very high return and a high bang for buck if they get moved.
Yeah, no, I don't, I don't think that's a bad idea. And Dolander did look really good. Palmquist is really interesting. I mean, because he kind of sits like 91, 92, you know, it's a side armor from the left side, really flat approach angle, similar sort of traits to like Cooper Jerpy. See, maybe the secondaries aren't quite as good as what I think Jerpy's are. But I think he's definitely, you know, an interesting name, or two, you know, interesting names there with of course Dolander, who I'm hoping gets called up really, really soon. Like that's kind of where my head's at a little bit, Dylan. I'm kind of praying like, hey, can we get Dolander up to double A so I can get some Dolander games? I know I made that sound like getting called up to the major leagues, but that was not what I meant, Dylan.
Of course, it's all about you being able to get good live looks on them. Why would I think you mean to get the majors?
Yeah, that is actually where my mind is most of the time. Of like, all right, like how can I get better looks here? You know, what can you possibly show me? So here, I'm going to first show a real interesting one out here. And maybe this is crazy. I don't even know if somebody would necessarily sell low on this guy. Go and send an offer out to the Jackson Jobe owner in your league. He's having a rough beginning of the year. There's been some stuff in some of those starts. I haven't watched all of them. Couple that I watched, things that snowballed, plays that should have been made behind him, calls he didn't get that he might have gotten, you know, in AAA or the majors, stuff along those lines. And I still think this guy is a very legitimate pitching prospect. It may not be a bad time to go out there and buy. I don't think there's any injuries. I think he's completely healthy. And, you know, I think this was kind of expected. This is how it goes with pitching prospects. You know, there's some ups and some downs. But it could turn around real quick where he could run off a string of like three straight starts where he goes five innings, the stuff is crisp, he's striking out 10, 11 batters, and then all of a sudden he's shooting his way up to the major leagues. I think Jobe right now is a really good buy low. So I know it's a little bit untraditional because it's a pitching prospect. We've now done multiple pitching prospects that are good buy lows. But I do think it's the case. I'm looking for opportunities to buy very good players. I think this might be an opportunity to buy a very good player.
That's actually a very good one. I like that one. It's there doesn't seem to be anything underneath the hood that's suggesting any injury or anything. He's still throwing 97, 99. Yep. His slider has 16 inches of horizontal break, 3000 RPM spin. Like it's like, he's still hurling it up there. So I think it's just like you said, what you see with pitching prospects. The underlying is all good. The metrics are there. That's all grading out well. It's just the results aren't there. So that's
and might even be a good trade chip that you can then flip at the deadline when he regains some value, you know, and maybe there's a chance of his major league call being imminent or potentially has just happened And that's when you can sell those guys for the highest price that you ever can. It's just like baseball cards, right? Unless they actually hit and become great players. So I like to sometimes cash my chips in, though, and say, hey, I'm going to take the bird in hand versus two in the bush. So I do trade a lot of prospects, which is kind of what I did with Eldridge and Lalanne. I was kind of like, you know, there's a chance that I could just reacquire them when they're good and about to be in the majors. That's what I do. But Dylan, I think this wraps us up. A crisp 50 minutes. We did a bunch of different news and notes. We broke down some of the things going on out there in the baseball world. And then we gave you guys six, actually seven, jam-packed targets to go out there and get. So go out there and get trading. Got more Robo Scout coming up. We've got a draft update coming on Wednesday. We've got the hot sheet and a lot of other really interesting content coming up with Baseball America. Thank you to all the listeners and the subscribers that help us do what we do. Like, rate, subscribe. I never ask people to do that, but do it if you're still listening to this. So there you go. Have a great week.
Cheers.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.